So are you all there in Daniel chapter 1? Daniel chapter 1. We're going to go through 1 and 2. And if not, then just kind of listen and try and tune in and see if you can capture this stuff too. So I think chapter 1 is a great, I love the heading that they put there. What does your heading say by chance? David's training in Babylon. That's right. That's exactly what chapter 1 is all about. So let me read through this and give you the commentary along the way. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put it in the treasure house of his God. So right from the beginning, you need to understand the cultural context and the historical context that this took place in. Jerusalem and the house of Jerusalem and the tribes of Israel had split into two tribes, and Judah was the southern tribe, and that's where Jerusalem was. And along came this Babylonian king, a huge superpower, came down and attacked Jerusalem, and it eventually fell. And when it did, a lot of people were taken away, but strangely enough, and kind of heartbreaking for them, was that the temple at Jerusalem was totally plundered. Kind of give you an idea, that'd be if someone came and broke into Searchlight and started taking all the TVs and taking all the speakers. I know Chad would hunt them down and destroy them if anyone took these speakers. But if you can imagine this whole place just being cleaned out and then kind of burned to the ground. Now, and we're not just talking about one little church here in Anaheim. We're talking this was the main temple of the Israelite nation in the temple of Jerusalem. So this king came in, totally destroyed the place, took all of its goods, and took it off into his own temple into the temple of his own God. Now, then the king ordered, I'm back on verse 3. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Now, these were not just any old Joe Schmoes that were being brought in. These were the princes and the nobility. And listen to how they're described. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. Needless to say, I would never be in the royal family. Maybe some of you would be. But so these were the cream of the crop. Not only were they just handsome, and that was a big thing back then, this physical characteristics, but they also had aptitude of learning, well-informed, quick to understand. So these were the cream of the crop. But remember, they were the princes, the nobility of the Israelite nation, and they were grabbed and forced to work in the service of the king. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were entered into the king's service. So let me tell you a little bit about this whole food and wine business. This was kind of important because a lot of people believe that if you ate the food and the wine of the king, you'd be eating the food and wine of a god, because those kings usually set themselves up to be gods themselves. So if you were able to eat and drink food and wine from the king's table, you would be able to receive some godlike qualities or skills. The power of the God would be upon you. So to receive that food was kind of that training again that they would go into. So they were supposed to do that for 3 years, and then they were to enter into the king's service. Now, again, remember the context. These were the noblemen of the Israelite nation, and they were captured and forced into slavery. And they were not only just told to work out in the field, but some of them were told, you've got to learn everything about the government all the way up to the king. Now, this is very much like the slave trading that took place here in America, taking people from their own country and dragging them somewhere and forcing them to do something in a culture, in a land that was totally foreign to them. It was a high sense of cruelty was taking place. And these people looked back and they said, not only do we like these people because we're in slavery to them, but we don't like them because they even destroyed our own church. They destroyed our temple. They destroyed our worship. So you could imagine that there might be this kind of sense of animosity that they're struggling with. Well, let's see what happens, what they do with that animosity. So they're supposed to be trained for 3 years and then enter the king's service. So then they talk about who some of these were. Verse 6. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, maybe you've heard of the guy named Daniel, but who's ever heard of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah? You've actually heard of them, but you just haven't heard them be called that. They actually were given new names. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. Isn't that a cool name? I like that. Belteshazzar. Almost sounds like a superhero. Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. So we're talking about four people, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So all four of them were nobility and were being trained in the king's service. So those are the people that we're talking about. And that's really the book of Daniel really talks about these four characters quite often. So what actually happens? But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now, God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." So, again, they're supposed to receive this royal food and wine, and Daniel, probably taking a religious stance at this point, saying, "No, I don't want to receive the food and wine from a king that sets himself up to be a god. I just don't feel comfortable doing that." He was going to stand up for his convictions and his beliefs. Now, I have to admit, that's a pretty tough stance to take, because this was just something that this was the practice. If you were being trained in the king's service, this is just what you would eat and you would drink. And the chief guard has a problem, because he says, "Well, if I'm not going to give you the meat and the drink, and you come up later on and you're looking like some skinny person and you're wasting away and you don't have any strength in you, then they're going to look at you and say, how come these people aren't being fed? And then I'm going to be the one getting in trouble for it. So you have to do this." But Daniel still takes a stance. And this is what he says. Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief officials had appointed over, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego people. "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. You know, I don't know if I'm making a stretch here, but I thought it was interesting that they chose to have vegetables and water. Remember, the royal food, this meat and this wine, were dedicated really to the king, to the god, and Daniel is, in essence, saying, "No, I serve a different God, a God that doesn't give me meat and drink that way, but he gives me vegetables and water." Kind of a more natural thing, a holistic thing of God is ruler over the entire earth. I admire Daniel for that. I don't think I could ever do that. I mean, you throw a piece of steak and some carrots to me, and I'll tell you exactly which one I'm going to eat, and I'll eat really fast. You put them on the same plate, I'll eat up the steak for a while and then maybe give the carrots to my wife and maybe she would eat them. So I just can't say. So I couldn't be in the nobility here. Daniel's pretty strong. So you can imagine. And also, did you notice that Daniel wasn't very pushy? It's not like he was saying, and you should be ashamed of yourself because you're doing this. He never entered into that type of thing. He was very relaxed and said, "Look, this is just my beliefs." And he's trying to stay true to his beliefs in a culture that was really anti him. And he says, "Just test me on this. I'm not going to try and tell you that you have to, but go ahead and give it a shot. Just try it and let me see. Let's see the results of this." And because of his politeness, really, and his persuasiveness, that's what happened. And you can imagine what happened if you have a bunch of guys eating meat. Probably some nice good hunks of raw meat. Oh, yeah, maybe some, maybe not raw. It's probably cooked, but, just big old hunks of steak and chicken and food and wine. And they got these other people that are eating vegetables. "Yeah, I know you out there. Yeah, I know who you are, you vegetable lovers. You know who's going to look a lot healthier at the end of 10 days, right? So that's what happened. At the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. So the guard was persuaded and convinced that, okay, I won't give you the meat and the drink. I will give you the vegetables. Now, so they were faithful in that little thing. And listen to what God does. Verse 17, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. So they were all given this wisdom and knowledge of literature and learning. And remember, this was in a culture that was completely anti-God. This was a culture that was dedicated to many gods. But they were kind of advanced and elevated in the ranks, and they could learn and understand and be taught in all that stuff. And to Daniel, he was given the ability to understand visions and dreams of all kinds, which is going to be really good when we get into later parts of Daniel. If only we had Daniel here to help us understand what Daniel was saying. It's going to be pretty wacky. But Daniel had this ability. It was interesting. Again, God gives him this ability and skill because he's been faithful. And Daniel's not even using it right now. He's been given the skill and the faith in order to do that. And it's only going to be later on that Daniel's going to end up using this gift. So, verse 18, at the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar, the big hoo-ha. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. So even King Nebuchadnezzar noticed that these guys were 10 times smarter than anyone else there. And that was given to them by God. And they were better equipped. So that's chapter 1. Chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar's dream. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. Well, and these guys were trained in dream interpretation. That was their skill. That was their ability. And so the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic. And the only reason why that whole Aramaic thing, this is one of the, there's only two books in the Bible, in the Hebrew Old Testament, that are written in Aramaic. And this is part of it right here. So that's, if you ever, why in the world do we need to know that he was answered in Aramaic? The rest of this portion right here is all in the Aramaic language. Kind of strange. Okay, so this is what they answered. O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it, right? That's what they're trained to do. You give me a dream, I'll give you the interpretation. The king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. Vicious. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. Do you hear kind of the, this is kind of a difficult task. It's kind of like, yeah, I've always wanted to do this. You know, you call the psychic hotline, you know, ring, ring, and they're like, hello, who am I speaking with? And you just, you're tempted to say, well, can't you tell me that? I mean, aren't you a psychic? You should be able to tell me my name. And that's exactly kind of what Nebuchadnezzar is doing. Hey, I've had this really weird dream. Tell me what it means. And they go, okay, tell us the dream. We'll tell you what it means. He goes, no, I want to test you a little bit. Why don't you first tell me what my dream was and then tell me what it means. He was kind of testing him. Now, there's actually some two interpretations of why Nebuchadnezzar did it this way, because he kind of sounds like he's off his rocker. And that is one of the interpretations, that Nebuchadnezzar was just some crazy dude. And he had been elevated to this high-ranking power, and he was really kind of throwing his power around. Now, whether it be to really test him, to really say, you know what, I really think you guys are fooling me. I don't think you really do have these powers that you say you do, and I can test it just by you not showing me what my dream was. Now, that could be one interpretation. The other interpretation was, there is an old Babylonian proverb that we had discovered that said, if you have a dream and you cannot remember it, the gods are angry at you. So, now this could be cause a little bit of trouble, because if Nebuchadnezzar has a dream and he can't remember it, he's going to be looking for someone to tell him the dream too. And he wants to remember the dream because he doesn't want the gods angry at us. Now, that could have factored into it. I personally just think that Nebuchadnezzar is a crazy man. And you're going to see later on, Nebuchadnezzar just kind of goes all over the map in some of the stuff that he does. So you kind of got the tension here. You got the difficulty. He's called in all his magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, and he says, tell me my dream and what it means. And they say, tell me the dream, we'll tell you what it means. And he says, no, and if you don't, well, you're dead. And your houses are burnt to the ground. But if you do, I'll reward you. That's kind of, this talk about not having good job security. Poor people. So once more, verse 7. So once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it. Then the king answered, I am certain that you are trying to gain time. You're stalling here because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is just one penalty for you, and that's death. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me. Woo! So the astrologers answer the king, there is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. They're saying there's no precedent for this. No king has ever done this. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they don't live among men. The only people that can tell you that your dream is the gods themselves, and we're not them. This made the king very angry and furious, and he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. Now we kind of see a little bit more about Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's role. They weren't just some royal janitors sweeping up after the king. They were part of the wise court of the king. And they were part of the magicians, astrologers, and sorcerers. And again, that's pretty big. They were trying to remain true and faithful to their God in the midst of a culture that was really anti-God. And yet they were. So the decree goes out. All the wise people need to be killed. And that includes Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Well, this isn't boding too well for our hero and his young friends. So Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon. Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact, not with you nasty people trying to kill me, with wisdom and tact. He was smart. He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. Thank goodness a lot of times what the Bible does is actually repeats everything. So here it just says, you know, yeah, all that stuff in the past, yeah, all that stuff, he explains it all to him. So at this, what does Daniel do? Roll over and die? Are you kidding me? Daniel went into the king and asked him for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. That's pretty huge. He's not just going to sit around. He's not going to try to escape. He's not going to try and fight. He's going to go to the head honcho and say, King, give us some time. And though the astrologers and sorcerers and magicians couldn't seem to get any more time out of the king, Daniel did. Talks about how powerful his God is, that he can change a king's heart and give him more time. So what does Daniel do? He's got now more time in order to, but remember his task is the same as everyone else's task. His task, he got to first of all figure out what the dream was, and then he can give an interpretation to it. But remember, Daniel had been given all that stuff from God about visions and dreams. Isn't it great that now it's going to come in handy? So Daniel returns to his house and explains the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Yeah, he's doing it slightly for selfish reasons. He doesn't want to die. But do you hear what he does? He grabs his friends and says, let's have an all-night prayer party. Because they need to plead for mercy from God in order to be revealed. They realize that they're not going to be able to play some guessing game with the king. The only way they're going to figure out what the dream was is if God himself reveals it to him. Now that's pretty bold. I think that's pretty big. And they're going to do it. And let's see what happens. Let's see if it actually works. Since there is more to the book of Daniel, you're probably thinking that, yes, he does live. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. So it happens. They pray, and Daniel has a vision. And he is given the vision of what the king dreamed. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He sets up kings and deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king." Now that's, again, this is good stuff. Because Daniel was not of the thing where he's going to receive a gift from God and then just kind of walk away and sit on it and say, "Well, you know, that was wonderful." He's going to take time and thank God. And remember, there still could be that animosity that Daniel and his friends have towards God. I mean, he did deliver him over to a ruthless king. They were in hostile territory. And yet Daniel says, "I'm going to praise you, God, for all that you have done." So, if you're just curious because you want to know what the dream is, if you want to know the dream, read the rest of Daniel chapter 2, and then you can go into chapter 3 and 4. It's a really strange dream. I'll try and hit on it a little bit next week. But essentially what happens is Daniel does go in, says, "Here's your dream, and this is what it means," and Nebuchadnezzar's pretty happy. And he realizes that Daniel's God is the one true God. So, now the question is, every time you read stuff like this, so what? Who cares? Nice little story. That was really wonderful. You know, I was thinking back to my seminary days when I was serving a church in St. Louis, Missouri, a church called Faith in Oakville. And they had a softball team. And so, you know, some dumpy kid shows up, because I was about in the same shape as I was back then. And so I show, I'll be on the softball team. And, of course, they look at me and they go, "Okay, Manning, right field. There you go." So I did. I kind of trotted out to right field. And I didn't do a whole lot out in right field, let me tell you. Not a lot of people could hit out there in amateur softball. Now, I do remember one hit that went out into right field, and it went over my head. So, you know, I really didn't do a very good job out there in right field. And, you know, I didn't train. I didn't try and get any better. I was happy stuck out there in right field. I was happy not doing a whole lot. You know, I'd go out there, stand, come in, do some batting. It was really kind of a cushy, easy position. I think all too often we sometimes get stuck in spiritual right field. We like where we're at because sometimes the things of Christianity are just a little bit too hard. And we say, you know what, I'm happy just not doing a whole lot. And I think Daniel could have also had that same temptation. Again, he was stuck in this foreign land in hostile territory, and he could have said, "You know what? I'm just happy living out my life. I don't really need to do anything great for God because God hasn't done anything great for me." But he didn't take that attitude. I was reading over Daniel chapters 1 and 2 over and over again because I was trying to figure out what God really wanted for us to learn today. And I kept coming back over and over again to chapter 1. And I kept asking myself the question, who cares about this stupid vegetable and water story? I mean, doesn't it seem kind of odd to you? Who really cares that some guy and his three friends didn't want to defile themselves with food and meat and wine, so they wanted vegetables and water? Kind of a strange, stupid little story. And that's when I realized it. Daniel chapter 1 is like the $100 question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Does anyone watch that show? I love it. I continue to try and get it. I almost got on it just recently. Ooh, came really close, didn't I? I answered all three questions. 1-800-433-8321. You got a cell phone? Give it a try right now. We'll do it we'll do it collectively. But if you ever watch the show, the $100 question is it's like anyone could get it. I think my son could probably even answer the question. So, you know, which of these vegetables is red? Would that be A, a lemon? B, a tomato? C, an orange? An orange. Wouldn't that orange be orange? Or D, I don't eat vegetables. It's really a stupid question, and everyone always, I don't think I've ever seen anyone miss the $100 question. And you always wonder, why in the world do they ask all these stupid questions from all the way up to about, 4,000, 8,000, 16,000, 32,000? How come it starts so easy and then it gets so hard? Well, I think I know why. It's actually kind of the genius of the game, is they don't want to grab someone from this group of people and say, here, answer this really tough question. They instead want to bring them along, get their brain functioning, get their juices flowing. Oh, yeah, okay, I can answer this question, and give them some success so they can flex their mind a little bit so they can do a little bit better later on. And that's what Daniel chapter 1 is all about. Daniel was given the opportunity to stay true to his convictions. Now, he didn't have to. He didn't have to stay true to his conviction of not wanting to eat the royal food and the wine. He could have made up a bunch of excuses if he wanted to. He could have just totally defied them and went on some wild rampage. But he didn't. He stayed true to his convictions on something that was, we would say, maybe a small test of faith. Because then what happens right after that? That's when all the stuff happens with the king. And you saw the order, didn't you? Daniel was faithful with just a little bit. Then God said, you've been faithful with this little bit. I am going to bless you even more with skills and gifts that you won't even be able to use until later on in life. And then because you've been faithful in this little bit, you're going to be faithful a little bit later on. You're going to be able to have the ability and the strength and the convictions to do these harder tests. Turn in your Bibles to the book of Matthew. Jesus thought this was a rather important gift, or important point. Matthew 25, starting verse 14. It's called the parable of the talents. Now, talent was money, and it could be anywhere up to about like $1,000 in today's economic scheme of things. But I also like it because talent can also then mean skill and ability. So kind of a double entendre taking place here. Parable of the talents, Matthew 25:14. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained you 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. And see, I've gained you 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who'd received 1 talent said, Master, he said, I know that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well, then you should have taken my money, put it on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. If you are faithful with the few things that God gives you, he is going to entrust you with so much more. How does that work nowadays? Well, I know that, again, a lot of us like to sit out there in spiritual right field. We say, you know what, I'd really like to be some, major awesome player for God, but I don't think I can do it. I don't have the gift of praying for hours on end that I hear some people have. I just don't read my Bible in large quantities like I know other people do. I know I'm supposed to give to the church, but it's hard. I can't do that. I have this problem with swearing. I'd like to evangelize to my friends, but that's hard. I just can't do that. So what we need to do is we need to start small, and if we're faithful with a little, God's going to give us a whole lot more. That's what we've been doing with this whole Bible reading thing. And I'm glad that you guys have kind of caught on to that and that you're excited about that. And I hope that you continue to do that. Right now, I've only given you stuff like 2 chapters a week. Chances are you might be consuming more than 2 chapters a week, and that's great. But that's something that's a good place to start. You can start little, and then you can build up. You want to have a great prayer life? Well, oftentimes you've got to start small. And then God's going to be faithful because you're faithful and you're going to be given so much more. Same thing with giving money. If you're not giving any money to God, to His church, He says, you know what? Start small. And build up. And what? You're going to be faithful with a little bit. You're going to be given a whole lot more. If you have a problem with swearing, I say cut out one word. Some people say just cut out the whole bad vocabulary. But I say start small. Start small and see what you can do. Because watch, as you are faithful with just a little bit, God is going to give you so much more. Same thing with evangelism. You know, start with someone you know that you have built a relationship with. Start small, inviting them to church or just developing that relationship, telling them, well, this is what Jesus means to me. You may not be able to give them the whole Bible in one day, but that's okay. You start small. And as you're faithful with that little bit, you're going to be given more and more. I was talking to Brian about this, and this is so true. He says, it's kind of like running a marathon, right? If you were going to train for a marathon, chances are you're not going to run 26 miles the first day, right? You know, you're going to run, you know, like 10 steps, get winded, sit down. Oh, I can't make it. Yeah, that's probably, well, actually, that's what I would do. Well, stupid me, I would just never even enter a marathon. But if that's what you were going to do, God calls us to run marathons, and He is not going to expect us to run the whole stinking marathon the first day. Remember, what was Daniel chapter 1? What was the heading? Daniel's training in Babylon. He was being trained by God. Be faithful in just a little bit. And God's going to give him so much more. And as we get stronger and we exercise our faith muscle and flex that a little bit more, as we continue to grow in wisdom and knowledge, God's going to bless us so much more. But we have to be willing to be faithful in those small things. You know, when you take a look at Jesus and the stuff that He was faithful with, it's incredible. He was only given 3 years of ministry. 3 years! I've been in the ministry 3 years. Let me tell you, I don't have a worldwide cult following. It's crazy. But He, after 3 years, was able to radically transform. Or maybe I do have a cult following. Maybe it's just not that big. No. Okay, back on track. Shoo! Jesus was able to accomplish so much in that time. He radically transformed people. He took that which was small, and He was able to be faithful, and it turned into so much more. He actually even told in a prayer to His Father, He says, you've given me a little bit, and now you're giving me so much more. When you think about what Jesus had to endure on the cross, that was not something that He could just come down, do, and get out of town. He had to grow in that. He had to get strong through God's power in order to finally face the ultimate test, and that is sacrifice and death on the cross. And then He asks us to do it. Daniel chapter 1 might seem like it's ridiculous to be faithful in small things, but that's when God gives us so much more. And I think we need to decide today, what things are we going to be faithful in so that we can get stronger? I think it's time we get out of spiritual right field. I think it's time we stop saying, look at all those great people that are doing so many things for the team, but I'm happy out here in right field. I think it's time that we start serving. I think it's time that we start evangelizing, start giving. I think it's time that we start praying and reading our Bible so that we can get out of right field. And move into center field and then into the infield. And we can do amazing and wonderful things for God. But you got to be willing to give up that position. You got to be willing to go into training. You got to be willing to be faithful in small things. So what are you going to be faithful in? What are you going to choose today to say, you know what, this is what I'm going to do? Maybe it could be the Bible reading. Maybe it could be the prayer. Maybe it could be the evangelism. And I think as we continue to choose more and more, and be faithful with a little, God's going to put us in some major tests, and we're going to be able to come through. Let's pray.